Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servadidio, and I am your host. I have such an amazing show for you tonight. I have guest Gary Pastore with us tonight. He was introduced to his first film in 1980, where he played a pickpocket in Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America. From there, he has gone to work on over 200 films and television shows, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. He studied film at NYU, which prepped him into the direction and direct in multiple award-winning short, Waiting for Bud. And now his first feature film, which had also garnered 3 Best Pictures awards since April, and premiered in Atlantic City. Welcome, Gary. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure to be here, Alexa. How are you?
Good, good, very good. I've been so excited to have you on the show. I know we've been going back and forth with emails and text messages. I wanted to tell the listeners, I just saw your recent film, Distressed, in September at the Golden Door International Film Festival of Jersey City, and I was just blown away by this documentary-style film that you did on depression, on stress, and dealing with it. And I really wanted our listeners to get an idea of what this film was about, how you came about making this film, and how it was for you.
That's a good question. I've been in the film business, as you stated, and I gotten ill back in May of 2010 or 11, I was struck with a very severe case of diverticulitis. And for those of you who do not know what that is, it's an inflammation of the intestinal wall. And it's usually stress-related. It comes from internalizing a lot of bad things, be it a job or a breakup in a relationship. There's so many different factors that go into what can cause this insurmountable amount of stress and create havoc in your body. And what happens to a lot of us is we do internalize our stress. We don't have an outlet. Most people that are in a stressful environment, they go work out a lot or they go to kickboxing, which I always recommend, working out or kickboxing or they run. However, at this particular time in my life, I was working so much, I didn't even have time to go to a gym. I was in the middle of a production and doing 14-hour days, so barely slept, nonetheless being able to go work out. And it wreaked havoc on my body. I was rushed to the hospital in very, very bad shape. I think I had 104 and a half, almost 105 fever when I hit the emergency room. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it hit me really hard, and it hit me out of nowhere. And sad to say, had I not gotten there that day, the doctor said I would have been dead the following day because it started to leak. Not to get too graphic and be gross, but the stuff in your stomach is not meant to ever touch any other part of your body. And when that starts to go bad, bad things happen. So I was in the hospital, and my children came up to see me, and it was so sad. In fact, I stated in the film, I'll never forget the look in their eyes, and they thought they were going to lose their dad, and I knew that I had to make a change in my life. So right then and there, I decided I'm going to make this film because I am a filmmaker, and I need to get it out to the masses, try and help people. And that started it. It took 3 years to make it. And not because I made War and Peace, but because I also ran out of funds. So, and that actually helped the movie. I shot the first half of the film back in 2011, 2012, and then I put the camera down until 2013, and we shot the final half of the film between last August 2013. I think we wrapped October. End of October. Yeah, about a year ago.
Okay. Did you feel when you came back the second time, did you have different eyes for it? Did you see things differently? Were you in a different stage of your life? Because sometimes when you work on something in the beginning and then you come back to it, you have some time to kind of step back and you see things maybe differently or see new things that maybe you hadn't seen before.
Absolutely. That Superstorm Sandy really did it for me, because it did affect me in a slight way. I had about $15,000 worth of damage to my home. I had a boat of the propaganda, which I absolutely loved. That was my sanctuary. I bought it. I knew that I couldn't afford it when I bought it, but I bought it anyway. And that was about 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago. And that boat gave me a lot of joy. I went out on the water and I didn't think about anything at all. It was my sanctuary. So when my days were dark and dreary and bleak, I would get out my boat and go out, and it would really, really help. It was a savior in so many ways. And then when Sandy took my boat, God, it made me very sad, But I ran into people that was so much more than a materialistic thing like a boat. So I would venture into their lives and all of their turmoil. One of the characters in my film, his name is Anthony. He's an ordained priest. He does mostly weddings. Every now and then he'll preside over a funeral, which he doesn't like, but he'd rather marry people. And I met Anthony from Union Beach, New Jersey, and Anthony lost his home to the floodwaters of Sandy, and he was living in a trailer behind his house for 14 months. And I interviewed him. I mean, he was a man of faith. Here is a man who believed so much in the Lord and the higher power, and he got struck down. And when I meet people like that, it makes you change the way you think about how your life is. And I was one of those guys full of doom and gloom. Oh, my life sucks. I got to get out of this hole that I'm in. But when you meet other people from other walks of life that have things so much worse than you, your tone tends to change a little bit, And I think this indirect compassion for other human beings and their plight could be one of the very best things to get you out of depression and out of the doldrums that you're in. And that's what the film Distress is really all about. So, yes, the second half of Distress took on a whole new life. And I'm so happy. I'm happy that I went through these changes because it really helped the film along. It's like the film took on a life of its own. And that's the unique thing about Distress, is that it's a movie that is so interactive because I interact with people in it. It's not one of those typical documentaries where you have me propped up against the background and all you see is me talking. I wanted to get out there and talk to people that have been through hell and back and get their perspective on life. And once you see the movie and you see how they're dealing with their lives after all they've been through, it really does give you a new perspective on what your life is all about.
Yes, I know. When I was there watching the film, half of the time I was sitting there with my mouth open, in awe, and was so it kind of very humbles you to the other people that you had met in the film and told their story. It really puts things in perspective. And then afterwards, when you did the question and answer with the audience, there was audience members almost in tears. I mean, people were very touched and very moved, and it actually spoke to them. And they felt comfortable to tell their story and to come forward and talk about their struggle and their journey. And I think sometimes you don't realize how you help people by just doing something like this. Like you've changed lives, you've inspired people, you've allowed people to express their stories and feel vulnerable enough to say, hey, I went through something, and look, I can overcome it too. And I think that's why the film has taken a life of its own, because it's touching so many people in so many different ways in their stories that people can identify with being stressed out, with being depressed, with feeling defeated.
Oh, no doubt. I have a partner in this. His name is Volker Barson. He's from the Netherlands. He lives in a town called Zwolle, which I went to visit for the first time this past thinking February. I went February and March. And, you know, Holland is drastically different than the United States. And when I first met the boy, he was a film student, and he shot my first movie for me. He's a DP, very gifted director of photography. He's got a great eye. He's also an editor. You know, I brought him on to produce this with me. And when I told him the story of what I wanted to do, he felt it was a little narcissistic. He felt like I was doing a movie about me. You know, and then going to Holland and seeing how these people are, they're very low-key and laid-back. You know, I guess the United States must be very shocking to him the first time he came here because, you know, they really are kind of happy-go-lucky there. I loved the town that he's from. I actually would even consider getting a second home there. That's how much I loved it. It was very, very peaceful and lovely. You know, it's on the canals and it's just really a sweet, sweet place. So I can understand where his personality came from. But getting back to it, you know, Folke was kind of in betwixt about doing this movie because he felt it was kind of narcissistic because it's about me. But it's really not about me. The movie's kind of about me, but I'm just a voice in the crowd. I'm basically the preacher in it. You know, I'm kind of preaching the good word to people from it. And that's where I think, you know, he didn't understand it. And then he had asked me for a script. I said, I don't really have a script. We're going to shoot this thing as it goes, which is kind of weird because that's not formula. And sometimes that's a recipe for disaster, not having a script or a direction. But I knew I had the direction in my head. I just needed it to kind of lay out the way I wanted it to. As you recall from the film, I had gone to Zion National Park about 3-4 years ago, before I even started to shoot. And this was when I just had the idea of shooting the movie in my mind. My sister was in Sedona, Arizona. She sold her house, and she wanted me to fly out there and drive back with her. I wasn't really crazy about the idea of driving from Sedona back to New Jersey, but I did it. And I tell you what, it was remarkable driving cross country and visiting all of these beautiful cities and states that we have in the United States that a lot of people never go to. And when I went to Zion, which is in Utah, the place was Shangri-La. I could not believe how incredibly beautiful it was. This natural landscape and park and these beautiful mountains with such great colors, you know, purples and rust colors. And, oh, my God, at night, just when the sun was setting, the sun would hit the mountains in certain ways, and they would turn all different colors. It was just amazing to me. And part of my journey to find my zen, which I do in the film, is to go and find this placid place that I can just go and let my thoughts go out. And I mean, it sounds kind of cosmic. I probably sound like a freaky hippie. No, it wasn't that at all. I climbed up this mountain just to be by myself, just to be able to be in touch with nature and the sky and think about all I have in my life that is good and all that is bad and how am I going to change it. And that was really the crux of this film. If you recall in the movie, that's really where the film took on a different turn of events.
Yes. It was so, so powerful, too. I think you also showed so many different faces of depression and of stress. I mean, there was anger, there was anxiety, there was hopelessness, there was despair. You were also able to find some of the humor in the film too, which people can relate to. I remember one part that struck very close to me was, you know, fighting with Siri or fighting with the voice command directions and all that, and how that happens a lot and getting frustrated and angry. And I think it really showed reality of everyday life. People can really relate to that. I think that's what was so powerful, and all the different places you went to, and also about, you know, finding a place quiet to be by yourself. And I find so many people are frightened to be by themselves. They don't want to hear their own thoughts or feel their own feelings, so they keep running. And that's how, you know, either depression, you get sick, different medical concerns. But it's really about kind of sitting with yourself, the good and the bad, and saying, okay, what can I do?
Well, if you can imagine, if you're really depressed and you're standing on the peak of a 7,000-foot mountain, I mean, you could make your depression go all the way by just one jump. But I am not that guy. Have I thought about suicide? Yes, absolutely. I have post-traumatic stress disorder right after 9/11. I dealt with a number of fatalities from the attacks of friends that I grew up with, and I went to a large number of wakes and funerals. And I dealt with very, very sad family members of those people, especially the children. A little child saying to me, when is my daddy coming back? It broke me up. It actually put a hole in my heart, every one of them. And I was down in the dumps. I mean, I had to call pastor from my church over because I really was thinking seriously about not continuing. So obviously when somebody's that depressed and they go up to a mountain, it's probably not a good thing. But you know what? There's no way I would have let anything in my life, once I got past that point in my life, ever affect me like that again. You know, even Robin Williams, God rest his soul, I met the man back in the 80s. I used to run a restaurant up in the Upper West Side, and Robin would come in quite often. This is before he was, I think the only thing he did back then was, I think it was right after he was done with Mork and Mindy. And he was always smiling, and I always saw sadness in his eyes, even after that. He did a film back in, I think, around 2008 called August Rush, and, I had seen Robin again after 30 years. And he was still the same old Robin, always goofing around and trying to make people laugh. But he always had this sadness in his eyes. And obviously that sadness took his life. I guess he couldn't. I think he was so famous, he couldn't let out his demons inside to anybody. And it might be because of his celebrity that he didn't want to talk to anybody. And that's sad because it ended his life. You know, I think that anybody who's going through heartbreak and depression needs to be able to talk, even if it's to talk to themselves. Sit on top of that mountain, go out on that boat, go to the beach and talk to yourself and say, is my life that bad? You know, and the tool that I want everybody to get from this movie is the tool of being able to go out and help somebody. You know, it's such a refreshing reminder that if you go out and you meet somebody that has things so much worse than you and you can help them, believe you me, it's going to take you one step closer to getting out of that deep, dark hole that we all go into when we are depressed. And I recommend that highly. To me, that's the best thing that you can do.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. I think it also lets you realize that you're powerful, that you have some power, that you make a difference. Because so many times when I'm working with clients who are very depressed, they feel invisible. They feel like nobody sees them, nobody can feel that what they're feeling, nobody cares. So I think, which even feeds more of the depression, they isolate, and then it kind of reconfirms that negative monologue in their head, and they really start believing, they talk themselves into believing this, that they're not worth anything, that, see, nobody notices me. And I think isolation is what really, help with depression. It really, damages it. And I know so many people that are so, they don't want to tell other people, like Robin Williams, if they're in the public eye, they're embarrassed or sometimes maybe ashamed. And that's not it. I mean, asking for assistance is so, so powerful. It really shows that you're a strong person to be able to ask for help. And it makes a big difference. And then to be able to give that back is so powerful, and I think it does. With doing my show and also in my private practice, working with clients and seeing them heal and grow and move forward is like God's work. You see it and you're like, wow, this is like a miracle. You can't even put it into words. The feelings you have, a lot of the people that were in your film that you interviewed was just, their stories were so heartbreaking and so moving. And they were able to smile, and they were able to talk about it. So it was so encouraging and inspiring to see that and say, you know what, I can get through this. I make a difference. I matter.
Yeah, Taylor Carmona, who was a little girl from here from Missouri, from Joplin, Missouri, and there was that tornado there. It was a year before the one that struck Moore, Oklahoma, and killed all those school children. Well, Kayla, I've been to her town, lost 250 people, and her father and her sister were two of the victims. She was a little girl, I mean, she was only 14, I believe. And I met Kayla when I went to Moore, Oklahoma, to look at the damage that that tornado created. And Kayla was there to aid and help the people from Moore. You got to think about what kind of an individual, especially at that age, who lost her daddy and her sister, which she was close to both, would get up and go out to help other people because her heart was so broken. You know, that is just an incredible human being. And she told me, and I think she even said it on film, that the way that she gets through this is to be able to go out and help other people. You know what? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I suggest to your listening audience that if you are that person, if life has gotten you down that much, go volunteer for something. Go work in a soup kitchen. Go help the elderly. Go help there's plenty of war veterans out there, especially from the wars of the late, that have come back maimed. And, you know, there's another subject in my movie. He lost three limbs in Afghanistan because he stepped on an IED. There are so many people like that that would love to have a helping hand, a partner, a person just to come over, even and read a book to. Believe me, you do something like that and you make a person say that's sad, doing something to help them and to help you. And that is where the real secret is. I think if anything in my film, the one thing that you will get out of it is that Distress is a film to help you, not just to help me, but to help you, that you are the person that is responsible for who you are and your feelings and your stress and your anger. That can all be resolved by you as a person. Not so much always, listen, a therapist helps because they help you get to the root of what your issue is. But it's up to you as an individual to be able to dig out that root of the problem and make it better. And to me, the best way to do it is to go and help others. Others that are less fortunate than you. My dad always used to tell me there once was a man who cried because he had no shoes until he met a man who had no feet. And that saying, that's my movie. That's what the movie's about. It's basically paying it forward, going and helping others. And believe you me, I promise you, you will feel better about yourself.
Yes, I agree. How did you, the different characters, did you know ahead of time you were going to pick these characters? Did someone tell you, or did you just happen to say, wow, you know, hear about them?
It's so funny and odd. I think that was the gift of this film, is that I just kept stepping in a pot of gold. Every time I took a turn, it was the right turn. It wasn't a wrong turn. I met Sergeant O'Berrien, the soldier I just spoke about, at a fundraiser for him, actually. And I thought his spirit was incredible. And I knew that I was going to shoot this part of the film. And I met him probably a year before we started picked up the camera and started shooting again. But I kept in touch with Brian, and I told him, I said, Brian, I'm going to feature you in this movie. And, we used Brian. And then going out to Moore, Oklahoma, and meeting Taylor Carmona, she just happened to show up on the day we were shooting. So you want to talk about the weird coincidences? It's almost like the Lord above said, Gary, I need you to make this movie. It's going to help people. You are a voice in the crowd. So...
I just got goosebumps.
That's what makes this film so special. I think it really does. Yeah. It makes this movie all the more special. Michael Cunningham, who was my production manager when we were out on the road, you know, it's funny, in the film, everybody see we land in Las Vegas because I had to stop in Vegas in order to rent a car to drive up to Utah. And I could have flew into Salt Lake City and came down, but I didn't want to do that. And Vegas is such a place of utter decadence that I thought that there would be a fitting thing to put a little splurge of Vegas in the film, which we do, you know, and it shows the script and all the people and all the decadence and craziness that is Las Vegas. And I make a comment in the movie that, well, Vegas is not a good place to go if you're stressed out, which is the truth. You know, and then I got on the car and we drove. We went to Utah. We went to New Mexico. And then we drove up through Oklahoma, Missouri, and we just went through the, through the cornfields in the Midwest to come back to New Jersey. And every state that we stopped in, I met somebody else. I met that woman who was 107 years old.
Oh, she's amazing.
She was amazing. And her clip is not that long in the film, but the one thing that she says in it is that at 107 years old, all you have to really have is love in your heart. And love from your family, and that's what kept me going. And that's a beautiful thing, you know, just to hear those words from that woman. You know, that little spot on her in the film was so uplifting, and I hope people will really get that from it, the message that she gave. So,
and it's so key, too.
Yeah, it's absolutely key. It's like I took it, you know, the film is like I took the camera out, and I went out one day, and I just shot all of these people. And putting it together. And that's basically what we did, you know, except that I went across the country and did it. And it made for a really pretty movie as well, because it takes you, you know, from state to state to state. You get to see what the United States looks like. And you get to see the beauty that is not only in the places, but in the people of this country. So, you know, I love this country. I love the fact that I grew up here, that my parents grew up here, and that I was born here. And I hate to see what's happening to her. You know, I hate it. It drives me crazy because she is such a great country. And we always opened our arms to so many people, and the thought of her ever not being here again is very, very sad to me. So I hope that people that do watch this movie or see this film understand that we live in a special place. And going to other places in the world and seeing the turmoil that other people live in, you really need to appreciate where you come from.
Yes, it's a blessing. This country is a blessing to be here and to be able to live here. And I think it was really interesting when you're saying how you went to the different places and, you know, people just, they showed up with a little girl and everything. And I find also with my radio show, when I have guests on my show, it happens. I saw your film. I was watching it, you know, your promos and stuff about it on Facebook and seeing that, and said, you know, I contacted you and said, yeah, I think I really want to, I want to have you on my show. It's I really like your, you know, what your film is about. And it just opens so many doors, and by going to that festival, it was so amazing. You never know who you're going to meet or what lesson or what journey you're going to go on. And I think for listeners to really hear that, it's not this master grand plan scheme that you have to figure out. It's sometimes just as simple as having love in your heart, being vulnerable, being, you know, grateful for what you have, looking what other people don't have and listening to their story and their suffering, that you can find it from within. And when you said about Vegas, I think that when you were talking about it, I said, wow, what a great contradiction by you going there saying, you know, most people would think I'm going to go to Vegas and it's so decadent, they can be distracted by the noise, the gambling, the drinking, the girl, you know, all that stuff. But that's not what getting away from is. It's about, you know, sitting in quiet and really finding it from you, not being distracted by different things, but more healthier, positive things.
No doubt. That is exactly why, you know, I don't know if you recall one of the people that saw the film, it was a man. He says, why Vegas? When he wanted to know why we wound up there. And, yeah, it was the confluence of how different it was from being up on that mountain in Utah, which is only the next state, to being on the Strip in Vegas. You can see it's night and day, literally. And, yeah, you know, a lot of people see depression is such a, I don't want to call it a disease. Depression is a problem that people have two choices to make when they're depressed. They could forget about it by gambling, perversion, alcohol, and drugs. But after the effects of that wear off, you still have the problem. And I think what I'm trying to show to the world is the best way, the best solution to get through a bad time, a bad period in your life, is to open up your horizons, open up your brain, and say, I'm going to go out today and do something positive. I am going to open up my soul to other people and try and maybe help somebody else. You know, just think about how powerful that is. I'm going to get up today, I'm going to help somebody who is going through a worse time than me. How is that going to make me feel? So instead of going to the liquor store and buying that set of whatever and drinking your problem away, how about get up the next day and say, I'm going to go out and do something good. Something really good. I am going to make a change. I guarantee that that solution is going to far overpower going out and getting drunk. Or going out and doing drugs. Or going out and gambling your life away. I think by you doing something positive, getting out, doing something really, really good for not only you but for somebody else, that is the key to recovery.
Yes, definitely. And I think, you know, by doing the other things, it's running away from the depression, running away from the problems, you know, drinking, gambling, dating, doing what you
want. It's a Band-Aid.
It's a Band-Aid.
Temporary solution. Listen, we all like to drink. I like to drink. But I never did it to escape problems. Sure, there's been days where I had a bad day at work or whatever, and I come home and I pop a bottle of wine, or I stop at one of my local watering holes and have a few beers just to get the edge off. Sure, that's people do it. It's fine. I'm not going to put that person down. But, you know, if you have to go to the bottle every day because you are in such a funk, I don't think that that's a good idea. I don't think that's a solution. If anything, I think that you're going to create more trouble for yourself and the people that are around you, thinking outside the box and doing something positive. And that's what I really want people to get from my film, is watch the movie, take something from the movie, and then go out and do good. Do good for yourself, do good for somebody else. If we all did that, can you imagine a world we'd live in?
I know. It would be just everyone do one good thing for somebody a day. It's, you know, taking an elderly person's mail in or giving, you know, saying something positive to someone that you see on the street. I mean, it makes a world of difference. I mean, you change people's lives, you know, and I had a guest on my show, Reverend Danny Garcia, a month or two back, and he goes around and walks and prays, and he had went into this school and was talking about praying and walking and healing. And afterwards, these two little girls from the school came up and said, thank you so much for coming today. We were going to kill ourselves today after school. They had a plan to commit suicide after school. And they said, we're not going to do it now. Thank you. I mean, my hair stands up on my arm again. I mean, it's just like, how powerful, you never know. And these two, he saved those two little girls' life by just, you know, providing hope and something positive, and that there is a way, because I think depression is so overwhelming. It's crippling. You don't see a way out. You kind of just see this underlying doom and gloom just like all over the place. So by being able to someone to bring hope into your life to maybe make you smile, is huge. It really, and you'd be able to do that to someone is life-changing. And I think people really need to understand they do have the power, and you change people's lives that sometimes you never even know by just walking down the street and smiling or saying hi to someone who you know, maybe no one ever says hi to, and they're very lonely, and you gave them hope. You showed them kindness. And I think that's really, you know, also with your film and why I really wanted to get you on the show is this is like, the film is exactly what I try to do with my show, is to provide hope, to provide healing, to have people be able to come together as a community and support each other without judgment, without criticism, because you don't need that. Judgment, criticism, you can always find that somewhere else. We don't need to judge and criticize each other. But just to feel safe and vulnerable and to have that team support is so powerful.
I agree. We are a world and a country of different people from all walks of life. We see it doesn't take much to get you depressed nowadays. You just got to turn on the television, beheadings, this whole fight against and about religion, which is just absurd, and economy, wars. It's just every day there's something to get you down. And believe me, and listen, I am not exempt. I still get angry. In fact, I got angry this morning. My 2-year-old daughter grabbed one of my arms. I have a collection of books that I've been saving from the 1800s to now, and she took one of my books from, I believe, 1910 and ripped the cover off. And yeah, I got angry. I was like, I yelled at my wife. I said, how can you let her in my office where I keep this stuff? Can't you just lock the door? And I feel bad about it afterwards because she's only a child. It's not really her fault, and it's really not my wife's fault. I probably should have it on a bigger, a higher shelf, But she's a baby. What am I going to do? So, yeah, I got angry, but I got over it. It's only a book. It's an old book, but it's a book. Every day you're still going to have people test you and try your patience and your fortitude and your aggression. It happens day in and day out. And I even say it in the film, if you think that you're going to be stress-free after watching this film and following my footsteps, you're delusional, because it's never going to happen. You're always going to have stress. It's just how you deal with it. That's how you deal with it on a day-to-day basis. Don't let the little things get you down. There's too many big things in this world to worry about. I feel that sometimes in life, if you have a lot of small problems and they're constantly biting away at your ankles, it's like a mosquito, they keep biting you in the same spot. It's a nuisance. Those problems tend to irritate those that have more, than one big problem is if you're dealing with many little ones. And I think it's because it becomes a nuisance. Not that these little problems are any different than the person that has one big problem. Problem is a problem. Again, it's your solution to solving those problems. How do you go about doing it? And, there are certain things that you have to do. You have to exercise your brain. I learned one thing, and this is crucial. When I was up on the mountain, I was able to think and see clearly. When you have so many issues going on in your life, and when you have issues, every other thing becomes an issue as well. If you have money problems, you have issues. But you have financial issues. The financial issues lead to other issues. The house breaks down, you got a roof, that leaks, you can't fix the roof, that turns into mold, the mold turns into sickness. It's always the litany of issues that bring you down. And the best thing to do is when you clear your head, when you go out to that mountain, you go down to the water and you look out, you clear your head, it's so much easier to think about every individual issue and what am I going to tackle first that's going to help. Can I tell you something? I have been broke, so broke, I couldn't pay my bills. And I've been so wealthy that I didn't know what to do with the money I had. I've had the best of both. It really does humble you. And it really does make you look at life differently. God put you on this earth to put issues in your hands. You know, it's like a therapist that told me that before. Gary, if the water was always flat, it would be boring. You got to have those waves. You got to have the hills and valleys in your life. And those hills and valleys are a learning tool. And you need to learn from your life on how to go on. You know, I'm 50 years old now. Maybe it took 50 years for me to realize just what it takes in life to make your life perfect. And I really think that's still up to the individual.
Yes, and it's not a race. I think some people are saying, oh, I should by this time I should be this way, that way, this way. And you can get so caught up in is why am I being punished? Why doesn't anything ever work out for me? And it's getting stuck in that negative thinking, which, you know, you have to break out of that cycle. And I know it's very hard, and it's something that it's a lifestyle change. It's something you have to, on an ongoing basis, work on. But I think that the results you get by doing that are so amazing and so life-changing. But it is hard, and I know especially when people have a lot of depression, it's hard to even get out of bed in the morning, brush your hair, to think of, let me go outside. But it's just making that first step, which really, I mean, it changes everything. So I would encourage listeners and all people who watch your film to really say, take that first step. To really say, okay, I'm just going to get up and try something. I'm going to go outside for a walk. I'm going to talk to somebody. That is just, you know, being able to do that. And I really like what that therapist said with the hills and the valleys. I mean, it just puts things into perspective. It's life. And unfortunately, there's going to be times that are very hard, and there's always going to be something to worry about. But it's being able to say, let me put that to the side, and let me, you know, that doesn't define me. That's not who I'm going to be every day of my life. Yes, I worry, and I can take, you know, I need to take care of what I need to take care of, but from that to not have it define you. And that's how, you know, you get medical sicknesses and all these other things, by it's festering and building and building, and you holding it in. It's just so damaging to your mind, your body, your soul.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it that we as individuals, I think it's just the human being, the nature of the human being, that we let things eat away at us. And the more it's compounded, the worse it gets. You know, again, I don't know what brings a person to take their life. I don't know why Robin did it. Nobody will probably ever know. I mean, he had a beautiful family. He had a wife that loved him. He obviously had a career, you know. I don't know what it is. I have a feeling that it's something that's so deep-rooted that it's been in his life, and he maybe has been harboring a secret ever since he was a child. Who knows? But there's always help, and there's always somebody out there that's willing to take your hand and hold it and get you through whatever it is you're going through. But you need to be able to let that out and let that person do that.
Mm-hmm.
And my suggestion to your audience, again, go out and help somebody else. If you are that depressed and that sad and your life has gotten you down so much, go and try and make a difference in somebody else's and watch what that does to you and your soul.
Yes.
My best advice I can give. That to me is the key and the hint to getting out of depression, stress. That is the best relief in the world, and it's a great feeling inside. It really is.
And it brings such amazing people into your life. I mean, the people I've met, you know, through my show, you, including yourself, and all of the people that I've met. I could never imagine what's such amazing, and what even on every interview I did. I know we spoke about, you know, what we were going to talk about tonight. And it's like it's just amazing what I've learned from doing the show with you, and a sense of calmness. And I can imagine what my audience is feeling. And it's just, if you learn just one thing, that's why I say, if you can just take some one thing from my show, just one thing can touch you in your heart or cause you to say, okay, let me try and do something different. That's all I want. I just want, you know, to plant a seed, to start the growth, to start the healing. And I find with your film, it really, it does that. it can speak to each person in their own way. They can make it their own type of story. Where can people see this film? Where can people, you know, learn more about it?
All right. Well, I have a surprise for you. Next week, we are being showcased at the Big Apple Film Festival in New York. And they're doing a special showcase just for Distressed next Sunday at Room 53, which is at 314 West 53rd Street in New York City. Next Sunday, this is a brand new restaurant that's opened, and Big Apple Productions, so New Apple Productions, is actually screening the film that night. This is their kickoff film, and they felt that they wanted to show this because on the circuits, in the theaters, there's not a lot of time for Q&A and the like, so they're giving this room a little special attention and this film a little special attention that night. I know that tickets are at the door. I think they're $10 and $20. I don't know what the $20 gets you. It might get you a food and your drinks since it's the restaurant. But I know that people are going to start lining up at 5 o'clock. I think the movie starts around 6. So that's next Sunday, October 12th at Room 53. I'll be there. You get to meet me. Hopefully you'll be there and they get to see you. And Now would be a great time for you and I to talk about maybe I bring this movie on the road and we put it up in some theaters, and it'd be nice to get some audience members who'd be interested to think about if they'd really like to see this live, and then they watch the film and we can have a nice Q&A afterward. I love interacting with the people after they've seen the movie. I've done it in Europe. I had two shows, one in Belgium and one in the Netherlands in Eindhoven. And again, Europeans are drastically different than us. They don't show their emotion like we do. They don't wear their hearts on their sleeves like we do, and especially Belgium. And I tell you what, a good half of the audience interacted with me. And in fact, the people that were from Belgium were actually shocked that these Belgians were able to interact with me and talk about my movie, because they usually just don't let their emotions out. They're very private people. So that in itself tells me how much of an impact this film has, is that it's really opened up a lot to people. I wish Robin got to see it. I really do. I wish I could have had him see this movie. Maybe it would have changed. Maybe. I don't know. But I know one thing. If I do save one life from this movie, I've done my job. If I can help that one person, I've done my job. My film is worth every cent that I put into it, and others have invested in it. It's really, really worth it to know that I've helped somebody. Funny, my mom
always says that too. You help one person, you help one person. It's amazing.
Oh, absolutely! It's rewarding. It's going to get you out of the depression that you're in. I was saying my last name Pastor means shepherd in Italian. Go figure.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Know?
And I think, it's this film was meant to happen. It was meant to happen. And, you know, I think sometimes when we go through hard things, to share your story, yes, it's hard to go through these hard things, and you wish you never went through them. But, I mean, to think about all the people's lives you've touched and that you're going to touch and save, is it almost says, okay, now I kind of see the bigger picture. I see the bigger picture, and it doesn't, you know, we're not minimizing anybody's pain, but it's saying there's a bigger picture. Just keep your eyes on the prize, at the light at the end of the tunnel, and have faith and have hope. It's just, it's a very, very powerful, powerful thing. Is there a Facebook page or anything for listeners to look at?
Yeah, they can friend me. I'm on Facebook, Gary with two R's. Pastor, excuse me, I have allergies or something going on, or Distressed, the film is on the Facebook, it's Distressed, D-E-S-T-R-E-S-S-E-D, people said, "What'd you come up with that name?" Well, de-stressed rhymes with depressed. And I actually created a new word. De-stress means to let out your anxiety, to de-stress at the end of a long day. I think it actually made it to the Urban Dictionary, so I've created a new word. People said, "You don't spell distress like that." D-I-S. I said, "No, that's distress. That's when you're in distress. De-stress means to take the stress out of you." So that's where the name of the film came from. A little tidbit of information.
That's amazing. It puts a positive spin on it. It's really a positive outlook on it.
The movie was meant to be positive, not negative. You know, it shows the hapless guy in the beginning who gets pissed off over every little thing. You know, I show a lot of pet rating it is, like that the Siri and the voice that talks to you on your GPS. And, you know, even the cell phone I have texted. I don't know if you recall, I was texting my attorney up on the mountain and I put in one letter wrong and it came out not what I wanted it to be. I have a problem with modern technology, computers, and all of this. I really think that, in a way, they're the root of all evil. You know, if you grew up in the 80s like I did as a young adult and a teen, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have all of these crazy gadgets that we have now. And our life was perfect. Perfect. I had no computer. I had no cell phone. I had no smartphone. I had no Siri. I had no GPS that talked to me. I still managed to get in my car, not get lost, pull over to a payphone and make a phone call. Life was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's what you make of your life. It's how you look at your life and it's how you deal with it. How you deal with it. That is what this film is about. How you deal with it. Make a change. Make a change for yourself. I know some of your listeners had some questions. Do you want to get to them?
Yes, we can. Let's get to one of the questions before the end of the show. Dear Insight into Healing, my son has been battling with depression for years now. He seems to be isolating more and not enjoying activities he used to. I'm very concerned. What should I do?
The first thing I think you should do is get to the root of why he's depressed. You need to sit down and have a heart-to-heart with him. And if you don't think that you can do it, maybe there's somebody in your family or a friend that can. This depression could be from something that you are unaware of. Could be, you know, God forbid, something traumatic happened to him that you are not aware of. You need to get to the root of what his depression is from, and then you can tackle that situation. Again, I think if you open up your son's world to the prospect of maybe helping somebody else out, maybe volunteer him in helping other people, that can be the start of a new life for him.
Mm-hmm. I think it's what you said was really rang true. You might not know. You might not know why he's depressed, and I think you know he might not even know what's mm-hmm. going on and why he's isolating. It's bringing awareness. It's speaking to him and having him realize, you know, somebody cares. Somebody sees this. That you know they're aware of what's going on, of what you're not doing about your behavior, and people care. And I think that's what really opens the door too. It's just to be there and support him and to speak to him and allow him to kind of explore about what's going on in his life. And, of course, you know, make sure, especially with this whole Robin Williams thing, it really puts things into perspective. You know, safety first, you know, really get to those tough questions. Do you feel suicidal? Do you have ideations?
Uh-huh.
Do you have a suicidal plan? And I know it's a tough thing, a tough conversation, but so I'd rather, you know, be uncomfortable for a little bit than, you know, God forbid what happened to Robin Williams.
Silence equals death. No question about it. Of them, what is irritating them? You know, I had a woman come to me when I was shooting the film. She was one of the audience members in the scene that toward the end of the film. And she said, my son, who's 13, was talking about suicide. And she came up to my office and talked to me about the situation. I gave her my ear for about a half hour. And I said, well, when was the last time you did anything with just your son? I said, you have 3 kids, right? I said, maybe you need to spend some alone time with him to make him feel special. And don't you know that that was it? I hit the nail on the
head.
Wow. She took him away. She spent the weekend running the kids perfect now. he felt alienated, like she didn't care about him. And all it really took was me to tell her that. And bingo, that did it. I have
and a life-changing moment.
Children. I have an older daughter who she's on her own pretty much. But the other three, you know, there's the middle child. I was a middle child. You have to give your children that individual amount of attention, every one of them. And you have to treat them special, and you have to treat them the same. Don't favor. Don't go over and above for one child over another. And if you do, you better show the other children the same amount of love and affection and gifts. Like my older son, he's 10. I just got him a cell phone. He goes to a middle school, which is not close to us. And in this day and age, the way things are, I felt it was necessary for him to have a phone just in case of an emergency. And, of course, yeah. You know, him getting a cell phone makes the other boy feel, oh, well, you got a phone. What am I going to get? You know, you constantly always have to do this. I did it. We've all done it.
Yeah.
And I think what makes me a good parent is realizing how difficult it is to be a child and what they go through on a daily basis. And just treating your children all the same. Giving them all love. Make sure you give them that individual love and attention. Take them out. Give them that one day out and make them feel special. Don't ever think they're so young and so precious and so sensitive. Don't ever think that they don't have these feelings inside of doom and gloom, and it's up to you as a parent to get them out of it.
Yes, they're very in tune. A lot of people say, oh, they're little, they don't understand. They do. But they understand
from
a child's point of view, and they take it with them, and they always blame themselves. That's what the scary thing. They always think it's their fault. They internalize, and I think that's really an important thing, to really be open with your children and to not just kind of say, oh, they know I love them. They know they're loved. Express it. Show it. Nothing bad can come out of it.
Exactly. If you don't have the money, treasure them with gifts. You don't have to do this. Take them by the hand. Bring them to the kitchen table. Draw with them. Let them be creative. Get them a guitar. Teach them music. I mean, I'm not saying everybody picks up a guitar or can draw pictures going to be the next artist, but you're showing concern and showing love for them and showing them that, hey, we're going to get through this thing, whatever it is, together. You know?
Yep.
That's a part of being a good parent. That's what it takes.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, then you shouldn't be a parent at all.
Yeah. It is. Well, Gary, we're coming to the end. I wanted to thank you so much for being on my show tonight. I know we didn't even get to go on to your next topic, that you're going to be working on autism, a film about autism. So I would love to have you back on my show soon. I would love to discuss your next projects, because you're really making changes and really making a difference in this world through your media. And I really want to make sure my listeners are able to follow all of that. So, if anyone has any questions.
With you, Alexa, a fan base is very important, because I want to help people. I love to help people. It's really helping me in my life. It really, really is. It's making me so much more aware of my surroundings and so much more aware of the plights of others. And the only way I feel to do that now is through this media source. Movies are meant to be entertaining, but they're also meant to be informative. And I really think that when you take something from a film, you struck gold. So, you know, I look forward to working with you to help others. I know that your never-ending search to help people that go through the doldrums of life is incredible. And maybe you and I will team up and really get this thing going and get out there and get to meet people and let them see the film and let's talk.
Yes.
Let's talk about what
I would love to. I would love to. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening tonight. Send any questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can look me up on Facebook at Insight Into Healing. Everyone have a good night, and God bless.
Bye. Thank you, Alexa.